Well, hello and welcome back to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm excited to be back with another segment here. You know, we're just back in another couple of weeks here from being at EMS World Expo in Nashville, and we're recording this right at the beginning of December, and holiday time's coming up, and, you know, I guess if I'm Santa Claus, that makes you my head elf, Sam.
Well, I thought I was a little taller than that, but maybe not.
How you doing?
I'm great, except where it's kind of a good news, bad news thing out here in California. Our drought has suddenly gone to flood warnings because we got it all at once. We're actually having the biggest storm we've had in 2 years in terms of the amount of rainfall. And so it'll be kind of interesting. There's about 2 days in the next week and a half that won't be raining. So stay tuned. We could be floating off to Hawaii or something, but that would be okay. And we have Dr. Joe Holly with us. How are things out there in Tennessee, Dr. Joe? Still holding together out there? Any weather anomalies or crises?
We've got a little cold weather, but nothing major. And we're just looking forward to a nice trip to flood rescue in California as soon as you guys are done out there.
Thanks, Joe. I feel much better now. Well, we have a special guest on this week, a long, long-term friend of mine who I met many, many years ago when I was teaching EMT, who subsequently became a medic. He worked in and still is in Oklahoma City. He just switched from being in the field to the Hospital Corporation of America, and we'll talk about that in a subsequent podcast. But Chris has had quite a few experiences as a provider in Tornado Alley. And if I remember correctly, Chris, about the time you got to Oklahoma, in fact, shortly thereafter, didn't you have like an F5 tornado go through there? Why don't you tell us about that?
Thanks, Sam, and the rest of the cadre of the podcast. I'm honored and privileged to be with you. That is correct. When I arrived in Oklahoma in 1998, I was introduced to the Oklahoma Standard working at the Emergency Medical Services Authority in Oklahoma City, and that is the 911 provider for the Metroplex. May 3rd, we had an F5 tornado that spawned just southwest of Oklahoma City in a small rural town by the name of Newcastle, and made a northeast track through basically the city of Moore, the southeast quadrant of Oklahoma City, Midwest City, and out into Choctaw, Oklahoma. And that was my first of many experiences with tornadic activity and severe weather. In that particular response, I was actually a fairly new certified street medic with EMSA, and I actually was en route to an apartment complex that had been had taken a direct hit. I was unable to get there due to debris and obviously inability to travel, and ended up basically at the epicenter of the disaster and more, and opened up a at that time, it wasn't a coined term, a medical branch, but we opened up a casualty collection point and started taking care of folks right there in downtown Moore.
I remember, Chris, and I wish I had it now because I would love to see it again. It was one of the most fascinating shows I've ever seen, and I can't remember who did it. It was captured by one of these shows that just talks about disasters, but it showed a guy, and you probably know who this was. Well, first of all, it showed the providers as they're trying to get somewhere and are met with all kinds of debris and basically have to stop, set up shop, and become a mobile ER. And they were literally putting people in the back of pickup trucks so people could take them to wherever they could take them. But more in particular, I remember, and they highlighted, and they had a camera guy with this one medic who went to Moore, and I think he was in a high school gymnasium, and he got buried in people. And we're talking critical people from head injuries to spinal injuries to just about everything. And this guy was just doing everything he could to kind of just stay afloat. You might be able to reflect more on that because that's all I remember from that episode. And that was years ago, but it was fascinating.
Absolutely. We were privileged to have the Learning Channel here with the show Paramedics. And they had been with us about 30 or 35 days. And they were out, you know, riding in the system and then running, you know, our normal array of calls. And they were getting ready to pack up, and they were actually talking about how uneventful Oklahoma City was. And
mistake.
One of the Oklahoma icons in EMS, someone by the name of Tony McCarty, who is, I think, now at EMSA 35 years, was a field operations supervisor at the time. And he's very much a weather guru. And he said, you know, you guys might want to hang around for a day or two. We're kind of setting up here for something that could be potentially big. They did, in fact, hang around. The first incident that you had mentioned or part of that show was actually about 400 yards south of the position that I was in on the other side of the damage path. And that was two paramedics, Kyle Flowers and Jana Hardy, who both have moved on in their careers. Kyle is now a physician, and Jana is now a bachelor degree nurse at the actually OU Medical Center where I worked. But yes, at that point in time, there was such a obviously large swath of damage, and you're talking about a scene that's, you know, 20 to 30 miles long. Every resource gets obviously utilized rather quickly, and sometimes you never really make it where you're supposed to go. You just got to kind of set up and do your thing. So they were actually down there, if you remember that episode, loading people in pickup trucks and utilizing doors as backboards and those types of things. The other gentleman that you mentioned who actually responded to Bridge Creek, and that gentleman is name is Steve Finley, and he is also now a physician up in the Tulsa area, I believe. But Steve went to the Bridge Creek High School and basically opened up a casualty collection point. He was the only paramedic that was anywhere in that area, and they actually picked somebody up. That's not a normal response area for EMSA. So they picked up a local on the way down there that kind of navigated them into that area, and as they eloquently showed on that episode, he was a man among men, you know, a god in that particular situation, and really did a good job down there. So, you know, that Oklahoma standard that everybody talks about after the MERV building's alive and well, and those were some of the medics that I got to cut my teeth with in Oklahoma City. So I learned from a really good bunch of guys and gals.
That's amazing. So you're saying, Chris, that really, I remember seeing that episode too, Sam, and I was glad you brought it up, and it's amazing that you have that connection. And Joe, what I heard there is disaster seems to spur people to go on and advance their careers, whether it's the physician
that's what
or
I was
nurse.
Thinking.
I was having exactly the same thought. It's sort of like, wow, that's the crucible of getting folks to go to medical school right there.
The one really interesting thing about the EMSA system is that it is very, very, very clinically and evidence-based driven. And it really, that was the reason I picked to come here. And I think that has springboarded a lot of people's careers. You know, they spent a good 10 or 12 years in the field kind of honing their craft and then, you know, decided to move on to bigger and better things. My wife, who is a BSN right now, is actually about getting ready to finish nurse practitioner school, and she was a paramedic at EMSA for 10 years. So there's a lot of folks that move on and quote unquote move through the ranks of other medical, you know, provider ratings. So it's a great place to start your career.
Well, that tornado didn't scare you off. I do remember you telling me something about, hey, you know, I don't think earthquakes are so bad. Maybe it's time to go back to California. But you love it there, and nothing's going to take you out of Oklahoma now. But what about the USAR? Because, you know, Joe being a USAR doc and all, how much did you utilize other resources? What other disaster resources ended up coming in and helping you out once you did that mitigation, that first mitigation, as much as you could?
Well, that first F5 tornado was obviously a big event, obviously not only with the EMS system and the fire service, but obviously with the entire impact on the medical system. And out of that kind of spun a disaster response kind of division that came into EMSA that has been run by a gentleman by the name of Mike Murphy. And Mike is just a fantastic guy. He was the fields operations supervisor when I arrived here, but out of that grew a lot of different things. Incident command, especially in Oklahoma when I arrived here, was for the fire service and law enforcement folks. It really wasn't for EMS. So we adapted that and started working on, you know, different kind of equipment configurations and things like that, because obviously your normal ambulance cot and your bags and things like that don't carry very well over and under and those types of things. We have a very active fire department here with Oklahoma City. They actually participate in a USAR task force, and they're very, very quick to deploy and assist in any way, shape, or form. And, you know, the real beauty about living in this state, and I'm sure Tennessee is very similar, being the volunteer state, is when these type of events happen, you have all kinds of folks come out of the woodwork, contractors with heavy equipment, You know, anybody that could lend a hand with a chainsaw, it's just an amazing response to watch. And that first one really taught us a lot going forward. We also have Tinker Air Force Base here, which they actually have, obviously have their own EMS and fire systems, and they have a very, very, very accessible heavy rescue component that is deployable into the community. They were, you know, at the MIR building. I do quite a bit of work with them on a MOU agreement at OU. And should we have a tornado strike at one of our hospitals or on our campus, we would obviously have them respond and help with, you know, evacuation of, you know, the towers and things of that nature, because obviously resources get utilized in those realms too. So that's something that kind of sits on the periphery that can help us out quite a bit. But it's an amazing public safety and community response when these types of things happen.
Joe, do you have a thought or a question? Saw you pop up there. Where'd he go? I don't know.
Sorry, I forgot how to unmute.
There you are.
So I was just thinking, as he was mentioning the, you know, the relationship there with the hospital, et cetera, I'd love to talk a little bit about the challenges related to the decision about evacuating a hospital facility. You know, certainly you can look at things like Katrina and other stuff where there were a lot of folks that got Monday morning quarterbacked over decisions to, you know, evacuate or not evacuate. And I'd be really fascinated to sort of hear your take on the real challenges about making that decision in the first place. And what all is involved in such a massive undertaking?
Well, I think that from the perspective here, we're kind of lucky in the fact that we have 18 metro hospitals. So we have quite a bit of bed capacity that we can move people around should we have an incident. I've actually had to evacuate one hospital here twice after tornadoes due to water problems. Thank God it was a smaller hospital, but it was a hospital that was a cardiac specialty facility, so we had a lot of ICU player moves and those types of things. But I think what usually would occur in this particular scenario is that our Medical Emergency Resource Center, or MERC as it's more commonly known in Oklahoma City, interfaces with all of those facilities, and they actually have representatives that come to the MERC and start working those problems. And it's kind of a collaborative effort and decision-making with the hospital administrator and public safety, and they start, you know, obviously working the phones and figuring out where we can move people and those types of things. But with my experience, once the administrator on call or obviously the CEO of that facility makes that decision or is assisted with making that decision, the easiest ones I've ever done are when we come into the facility and we basically work with their direct supervisors and say, you know, we're here to help you. We can run it if you'd like. And most of the time, they're very happy to hand it over to us, and basically just we get in there and obviously move people, and that's kind of what we do. But in our particular situation downtown at OU, we have a 7-floor adult tower, we have a 9-floor children's tower, and then I have a facility up north that's 4 stories. So we've never had to evacuate one of those. We do have obvious plans in place. You know, we drill in many, many, many different capacities, moving people downstairs. How do you get the NICU evacuated with the ISO-X? You know, those types of things. Deployment of ambulance strike teams and asking for those resources appropriately. And basically just coordinating that effort. And that's one of my job duties with OU is to basically work with the emergency management inside the hospital to make sure we can get those patients out and taken care of appropriately.
Talk a little bit, Chris, about exactly what you do now, because I can't say I'm exactly entirely sure what you do, because you just made a transition here recently. But I know you've been playing with Ebola and setting up for that, although we've had that conversation many times. But it just sounds like you're doing some interesting things.
HCA had a vision about 5 years ago in the North Texas Division, which is Dallas and the Oklahoma market. And they've actually expounded this across the country. And we may have not been the first. I'm not exactly sure on the history of it. But they figured out real quickly that EMS and the providers that bring patients to them are very important for their business. And there's always been the rub, you know, over the years, as everybody knows, of the, you know, medics versus the ED and the ED versus the medics and the customer service aspects that sometimes lack there. So they had this vision to get somebody who could be an educator, who could be a liaison, who could do some customer service. And, you know, basically a duties as assigned position. And North Texas has two EMS specialists in the Dallas area that oversee 10 hospitals. And then they have me in Oklahoma, which I oversee the OU medical system, which, as previously stated, an adult tower, a children's hospital. We have a general hospital in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is about 15 miles north of Oklahoma City. And we're about to open our first provider-based ED. So I'll have four facilities that I'll be working with. But I'm basically the guy that puts out all the fires on the EMS side. I'm also somebody that they come to with transportation issues. I'm currently working on a project to set up an official critical care ground transport network in the state of Oklahoma. Right now, we don't have anything recognized as far as the definition of a critical care paramedic or, you know, a set of protocols or statutes that covers that type of practice of medicine on, you know, on an official health department capacity. So that's one of the projects I'm working on. I'm working on a pre-hospital sepsis project. I'm working on a pre-hospital PE recognition project. So I got a lot of irons in the fire. So that's kind of the cool thing about this job is it's not really your normal EMS, you know, education job or EMS operations job. It's kind of a, you know, jack of all trades type situation. So, which really kind of matches my personality wonderfully.
Yes, master of many talents. Well, you can't get bored. I got to give you that. But just out of curiosity, though, if an F5 were to hit today, God forbid, what would your role transition to? What would you be doing? Or is that still kind of just up in the air because you haven't been there yet?
Well, I have two assigned disaster duties. If our facility is directly impacted, I would go to the facility and start working with incident command there, you know, working as far as evacuation of the patients and things of that and coordinating with local EMS services and the ambulance strike teams that will be forthcoming. If it hasn't affected our facility but we'll be taking patients, more than likely I will be assigned to the MRC and I will go there and obviously liaison with whoever is running their show on that side and just making sure the EMS guys are taking care of them as well. So, and that, of course, is subject to change at any point in time, depending on what they like me to do.
Well, you know, when Joe was talking earlier about hospital evacuations, who makes that decision? I mean, you have so little time once a tornado hits the ground in order to, I guess you can't even know for a fact where it's going to go because these things change direction. And I can't tell you I'm a tornado expert because I live in earthquake country, but how are they made and who makes them and when do they make?
Basically any facility in Oklahoma has the code black standard. So if there is a potential tornado or tornado strike and it would be coming toward our facility, they would initiate a code black, which obviously means move patients into the hallways and away from windows. And we're going to shelter in place and obviously hope for the best. And if we would take a direct hit at that point in time, our ICS structure internally would already be up and running. So we would have leadership in our command center, which is in the basement of our adult tower. And I think at that point in time, depending on facilities and ability to obviously run the plant and have power and those types of things, you know, somebody at a little bit higher level than I would probably make that call. I'm guessing the CEO of the medical system or the CEO of the facility that's impacted would probably make that decision. So,
but it doesn't seem like you'd really have time to move people at that point, right?
No, we would probably be doing that after the fact. It would probably be a situation where they just shelter in place in that facility, and if we would have to move them due to, you know, a facilities issue, that would be after the fact. Most of these events are probably, you know, 10 minutes long at best, and then it's days recovery.
And Joe, that's been, based on what I've heard you talk about in the past, that's been your experience. You were in, was it in Joplin that you went and had the setup at the hospital facility there?
Yeah, Joplin and Moore actually as well. I was just thinking as he was talking about Moore, Oklahoma earlier that you know, that tornado that struck there about a year ago was very near that original path and more. And I'm sure very familiar territory for Chris.
How close have Absolutely. You come, Chris? You've had a few of them.
Yes, actually, the last two events we had, the last F5 and the F3 that happened on a Sunday-Monday scenario, the F3 passed about a mile from south of my house. I sat and watched it go by, and that one proceeded yeah. out in eastern Oklahoma County and out into Shawnee. And then the F5 that spawned pretty much in the exact same place that that first one did and basically almost took the exact same track past about 3/4 mile north of my house. So we've been very lucky. I consider this very sacred ground, and I will probably never move off this lot because it seems to either go north or south of me. So I think we're in good shape there.
Either That's that good. Or move to Tennessee.
Well, and I think that the lesson here is that, you know, here on the East Coast, we worry most about hurricanes, but those are situations where you can see the storm coming, you can plan, you can evacuate ahead of time so that the coastal areas move inland to avoid storm surge and flooding in that regard. But everything is that happens with a tornado, and I guess earthquakes as well, is really reacting after the fact.
Absolutely. And now that Oklahoma has had more 3.0 to 4.0 earthquakes in the last year than any other place in the country, that's the next hot topic that we're working on right now. So,
well, how well built are the facilities there? I mean, when you're talking the hospitals specifically, again, I'm not a tornado expert, but can they withstand most F3, F4 tornadoes if they have a direct hit?
I think if we took a direct hit any structure in Oklahoma from a tornado perspective, we would be in a bit of trouble. Everything here is not obviously up to West Coast standard construction as far as those types of events with, you know, flexible buildings and things like that. Most of Oklahoma City is very old construction. So there's the fear of obviously, you know, those winds taking it from the earthquake perspective. And we just actually had our regional medical planning meeting this morning, which we did an earthquake exercise, and some of the quote-unquote estimates of damage and things if we would get at a level of 4 or higher in an earthquake situation, they're actually very concerned about the entire infrastructure of Oklahoma City because everything is so old. So we would lose gas lines, we would lose, you know, power poles, and that's a phenomenal loss because our we would have some pretty big problems. We also have a very old water system here. So, you know, piping and things like that would be a major concern. And obviously, as I'm sure you guys are aware, if a hospital loses water, you can live for about 12 hours without that. And then we got to start really making some hard decisions.
And we're going to go ahead and cut this discussion off there. It was a great discussion with Chris Prutzman. So good, in fact, that we went long. So we're going to bring you the second half of this discussion next week on the show here at DisasterPodcast.com. I want to thank Dr. Joe Holly and my co-host Sam Bradley for coming on the show and joining us. And, of course, you can find links to them and everything they do over at DisasterPodcast.com. Again, a special thanks to Paragon Medical Education Group for their continued sponsoring of this program. You know, we couldn't bring the Disaster Podcast to you each week without their support. And I urge you to go over and check out their site at ParagonMedicalGroup.com. You can also find them over on Facebook and on Twitter. And follow those links. Friend, follow them. Head to their site. Check out their resources. Maybe you need to bring their special experiential training into your system so that you can be better prepared for disasters when they strike your community. We're going to pick up with the rest of this discussion with Chris Prutzman about what he's doing in Oklahoma with disaster preparedness in next week's episode. And in the meantime, for Dr. Joe Holly, Sam Bradley, and myself, I will thank all of you for checking out the show and remind you all that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.